want to welcome you to the Trauma Informed Educators Network podcast. This podcast is coming out of the Trauma Informed Educators Network Facebook group. I am so looking forward to talking to people globally about their trauma informed journey. As the principal of Fall Hamilton Elementary School, a trauma informed school in Nashville, Tennessee, I have learned that this is not a destination, and it truly is a process of learning and adjusting. So this podcast will be speaking to guests all over the world about people who are just starting their journeys and people have been on this journey for many, many years. So I hope you enjoy our guests. I hope you learn something just as I am. And welcome to the Trauma Informed Educators Network podcast. This is episode number 37 of the podcast, and today's guest is Dr. Dennis Carter. He is armed with the belief that every student can succeed. Smith County School Superintendent Dennis Carter works to ensure that children thrive in school and in the community. A former special education classroom teacher, he witnessed firsthand the potential growth and development in every student. He also sees the barriers that students face, preventing them from reaching their fullest potential. Smith County Schools are implementing programs to become a resilient, driven, trauma-informed community, as research is showing that too many kids are exposed to trauma. With his focus and methods of healing, children can cope. Too often, overwhelmed children fail to cope, and the staggering outcomes appear in the cost of healthcare and imprisonment in both monetary and human terms. Carter is excited about the focusing on the root causes of societal issues. The changes made will impact the community, the children, and future generations. The momentum is growing, and it is their charge to capture that momentum and make a difference to impact the lives of kids in his community. He is a native of Smith County, Virginia. He is counting on people in his community who always pull together in times of need. Carter says, "We know strong children grow to build strong families, and strong families build strong communities." So here's what Dr. Carter had to say. All right, here we are with episode number 37, which it just blows my mind. And I want to thank everybody that came or was part of the live stream or listened to the last reunion of our previous three guests. It was amazing conversation, and today is going to be just as amazing. The guest we have on today is Dr. Dennis Carter. He is the superintendent, you heard it right, a trauma-informed superintendent of a school district, Smith County Schools in Virginia. So, Dr. Carter, I know you want me to call you Dennis, but I'm going to call you Dr. Carter the first time. Welcome to the Trauma Informed Educators Network podcast. How are you? Tell us your story, and let's hear about you.
Well, thank you, Matthew, and thank you for having me. I think you're giving me more credit than I deserve. We are on a journey to becoming trauma informed and building resilience within our youngsters and within our staff. But a little bit about me. I am a lifelong educator here in Smith County. I actually graduated high school in Smith County and came back to begin my career as a special education instructional aide and then a special education teacher. Then I became an assistant principal of an elementary school, a principal of a combined pre-K through 8 school, and then a principal back at our largest elementary school, then director of curriculum instruction, assistant superintendent, and I've served as superintendent for a little over 4 years now. And it's quite a journey, and I'm very proud of Smith County and proud of the work that our staff is doing. And it's certainly, while I am on this talk show speaking with you about this, there could be many others that do it, because it's truly been a journey that we've taken collaboratively with the team. A little bit about our journey. We realized a couple of years ago, our local hospital was doing a needs assessment. And in that needs assessment, a lot of things came to light and a lot of things that I was not aware of. And a couple of the statistics that rang true to me were this one first. We were spending back in 2010, $675,000 on regional jail costs, which is a lot of money. That's a tremendous amount. But in 2019, we jumped to $2.9 million. And when you see that kind of growth and you're feeling the impact on the funding body in a locality, that's funds going to incarceration that could be going to education. And what we're dealing with there is we're dealing with the outcomes as opposed to root cause analysis. And we worked hard to identify some areas, and trauma just bubbled to the top. And what we're seeing is, you know, we have families struggling, and those families that struggle, we've got to be able to find a way to provide support for the families through wraparound services and really start at a very young age addressing those concerns. Another data point that really concerned me was we were ranked second in the state of Virginia for kids born addicted to something with neonatal abstinence syndrome. And that's not a statistic that you want to be attached to. So we had families struggling, and we continue to have families struggling. So as a school division, how do we fix that? How do we work together to identify those issues and really solve the problems? And we know this is a generational issue. This is not something we can fix tomorrow. But my kids' kids will see the benefit of the work that we're doing now. So again, I want to stress a collaborative piece. This is certainly not Dennis Carter by any means. This is a team in Smith County, and it's teams from our cafeteria staff to our custodial staff. Our bus drivers have been trained in ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, and ways to overcome that. And our teachers, instructional aides, just everyone within our system at this point have been trained and extremely receptive to making a difference. And we know that public education is, we have benchmarks we have to meet, and all of our schools are fully accredited. We have a population of right at 4,000 students. We have 7 elementary, 3 middle schools, 3 high schools, and a career and technical center. And again, buy-in from across the division, because we can all relate. We can see students that are struggling and having a hard time, and we want to see success. We know that strong kids help build strong families, and strong families build strong communities. And when we can accomplish that, we all win. So that's a little bit about Smith County and a little bit about me.
Well, and I love your philosophy. It is that opportunity. And I want to give you just a little credit, which you're probably going to try to deflect. It is important as leaders, right? And I'm a leader. I'm a school leader in my own environment, to create the atmosphere for this work to happen, which I think is really important that you've done that. So talk to us about, how did that start? Where did the shift go? Hey, this ACE or adverse childhood experiences and this trauma work, this is something we need to grasp on. And where did you start your journey?
Yeah, that's a great question, Matthew. And through the conversation with the needs assessment at the hospital, one of the contributing groups there with us was Mount Rogers Community Services. That's our local community services board. And they had representation there, and there was a member that had been trained on adverse childhood experiences and knew the outcome, knew the data, knew the research behind ACEs and truly how that could impact not only a child growing up, but impact an entire family and the outcomes of that child later in life from a health outcome standpoint. And once that, I'd never heard that before. I'd never heard the term. And once I heard that, it was straight ahead and full speed. How can we fix this? We're, you know, as educators, we work to solve problems, and our goal is to make kids stronger. So how can we fix it? So we worked with John Richardson Love through Child Savers. Child Savers is the organization, and we brought them down for some professional development with some key leaders in our school system, some principals, pupil personnel director, our nursing director, myself, and again, some other key stakeholders. But we also involved our law enforcement. We involved our sheriff's department. We have 3 localities or 3 local police departments. We invited them. We invited court service units. We had a large group, and we extended it. You know, this is not something we want to fix in Smith County. This is something that needs to be fixed globally. So we invited everyone within our region to come out to John Richardson Love. So he provided a professional development for us exclusively as Smith County Schools leadership. And then in the afternoon, he did one for the community members. And it was just a great response. Piqued a lot of curiosity with educators, and the fact that, you know, you could identify students within your school, within your classroom, that you know that are experiencing difficult situations. So how do we deal with it? So with John Richardson Love, the conversation was fantastic, but we wanted more. We wanted him to share that with everyone. And so we did have him back, and we worked with Mount Rogers again. They had some staff members that were trained. and back to school training event one year, a couple of years ago, actually, was trauma-informed care. And we exposed that to everyone. And beyond that, you know, there's two pieces to this puzzle. It's a realization and understanding of what trauma, ACEs, and what this is. Then how do you deal with it? What's the second phase of that? You know, there's an awareness and then a treatment. And the treatment piece has been just, it's been a grassroots effort. I'm so excited to talk about some things that our school system's doing. But it's been amazing to see the free flow of thought from our teachers to our staff that come up with ideas to truly help our youngsters and to make a difference. And I'm sure we'll get to that at some point. But again, John Richardson Love came in. We had Becky Haas, who you've had on the show before, that has trained. In fact, she provided a training for our cafeteria workers, our administrative assistants, our bus drivers within the past 6 to 8 months in Smith County Schools. So we're all trained. We're certainly not there, but we're moving forward, and it's something we're very proud of.
But for the foresight to see the community has to be involved is so important. And to be quite honest, I think it's a piece that a lot of people miss, right? It's a piece that if your bus drivers aren't on board, if your custodians don't understand, if your community law enforcement don't understand, right? It is a huge effort to shift a community into a more resilient trauma-informed community. So you started with the why, and I can guarantee you that most people listening who are doing this work, we all started in that same space of learning about adverse childhood experiences, listening to Dr. Nadine Burke talk, reading books and the research studies, right? But then you get to what you just said. It's the innovation and the what do we do. So I would love to hear, again, like I told you before recorded, you're the only superintendent I've ever had on here, and you're the only superintendent I've actually talked to about a big picture view. So what were some of those things that you saw schools engaging in around innovation?
Okay, good. I want to talk community once for a minute, and then I'll circle back to the school side if that's okay. You keyed on a point of the community piece. And I think that, again, going back to that initial meeting of with the hospital and doing the needs assessment, that came to light that this was not a school system issue. This was not a hospital issue. It wasn't a sheriff's department issue. It wasn't a community service board issue. We were all dealing with the same things. And we were working so hard in our own silos. We needed to work together. There's so many things that community services are doing that amazing work. School systems doing amazing work. Sheriff's Department, bless their hearts, doing amazing work. But no one was sharing. There was no collaboration and just everybody working in their own silo. So that brought down the walls and allowed conversation to happen. So, you know, I do feel like from the community aspect, that was the charge. You know, how can we pull together? And without that needs assessment, I don't think it would have happened. From that point, there's been some exciting movement in Southwest Virginia. The United Way of Southwest Virginia has agreed to become the backbone organization for trauma-informed care throughout our region. So that's going to pull resources from Smith, from surrounding counties. We encompass in our region 19 school divisions, 19 counties. And so that work is going to be tremendous when we can make a difference in our entire geographic area, not just in Smith County, which that's all of our goal, right? To make a difference all over the place, not just in our hometown. But with that, it's been interesting to see the different groups and how they work together. And one of the things I would like to highlight is the LENS program. And it's with our local law enforcement, and it stands for Law Enforcement Notifying Schools. And, you know, law enforcement, when kids see law enforcement, school resource officers have been fantastic for our schools because kids see officers in a positive light. Unfortunately, a lot of times law enforcement's having to go to homes for undesirable conditions. And with this program, Law Enforcement Notifying Schools, we have a system set up to where our chief school resource officer, he's a captain and our resource officer, any department within Smith County that has to visit a home with a child makes contact with him that night. He contacts a person in our central office, and they will do, they'll call the principal the next morning and say, "Hey, is Dennis Carter at school today? Just want to make sure he's okay." And if I'm not, then law enforcement or school will make a well check visit to make sure the child's okay. But beyond that point, it's, you know, we don't, what happens at home, we don't, that's not our charge. We don't need to know that. But we know that Dennis may need a little extra love for the next period of time. So it's all hands ready to deal with Dennis if he's having a bad day, good day, whatever. But we want him to know we're there to support him through anything.
I mean, I'm blown away by it. Honestly, we have something called Handle with Care in Nashville, right? Very similar. But the piece that you added that we don't have is the actual law enforcement department checks with the school. And then if the child's not there, actually checks on the that is unbelievably remarkable and innovative. And of course, I'm in an urban area. We're in a bigger city, but still, I know that that's probably a small law enforcement division. They probably don't have to prioritize this work to that degree speaks volumes to the commitment of your community. And how amazing. I will be talking to our Handle with Care coordinator about that because that's remarkable.
And we have Sheriff's Department, again, three local police departments, and the chiefs of police and the sheriff completely bought in on this. And I could not imagine a better partnership when trying to make a difference in a community. So that's one small piece of the community pulling together to make that work. Now, the school setting, you asked me to talk about the pieces of within the school. The school work is amazing. We, as a school division, as a school superintendent, requirements from the state of Virginia, we have to have a school improvement plan. You know, what are you going to key on for the year? All of our schools are fully accredited. Let me say that up front. We're proud of our academic piece. Our schools do remarkably well. But one piece that we added last year, this would be pre-COVID year. So I guess 2 years ago, COVID kind of has collapsed my time frame just a little bit. But a couple of years ago, we began asking school divisions to develop a trauma goal for their school, and it's to build resilience. You know, we try to focus on resilience more than trauma. We want to focus on the good, not the bad, and we focus on the outcomes. So looking for the resilience piece. And some of the work that they have put in is just amazing. You know, we have touted as educators for years, build relationships with your students. You know, make a connection with the kids that you serve. And educators do a remarkable job in building those connections. But we've asked one of the schools in particular, Chilhowee High School, has took it a step deeper. And we had a couple other schools do the same, but this was their charge. They ask each teacher and custodian, cafeteria, every staff member to identify two kids and build a deeper relationship. And we had things evolve from taking kids fishing to ball games, to out to eat, just all sorts of things. And it was, the kids were not told that it was happening. This is something we didn't share socioeconomic status. We didn't share anything. It was, as a teacher, who do you think needs some additional support? And you know, as an educator, and I know, we know our kids. We know the kids that need that additional piece. Whatever that is, they need the additional piece. So our view is, if you can build a foundational relationship with a kid, that's certainly going to help overcome the trauma in their life. Some type of stability, some type of lock, some type of connection. And it's not what we found, and I wrote this in a paper. What we found was, when you talk to the teachers, they spoke about the kids that they were serving as though it was their own child. It was that sense of pride. And when you have that, I mean, it gives me cold chills even thinking about it. Just the sense of pride that they had in the kids and the differences that they made. And, you know, that's charitable. You know, discipline offenses went down. Attendance skyrocketed with some of these kids. Just all the things that are secondary pieces to everything improved, but we made the kids stronger. And that was the ultimate goal. So it just, that's one of the amazing things.
Well, and when you say, I mean, relationships, that is it. And Dennis, I, you know, I've been in education for 15 years, right? Not extremely long, but enough to know a little bit. At the end of the day, there was a shift in education where we've lost the focus of relationships. And don't you find it so interesting that now it has to be our number one priority, right? Because in order to get high academics, kids have to feel safe. They have to be vulnerable. They have to take risks. They also have to feel connected and be empowered. Those pieces have to happen in a relationship strong environment. And so for people to go out of their way just to know a couple of kids in every building, the impact that has is remarkable. And we do something very similar before COVID. We actually, every adult mentored a student, including myself. And, you know, those are real, true, strong relationships that I will cherish as a principal for the remainder of my life. I tell people all the time, the kids probably did more for me than I ever did for them. They taught me more than I probably ever taught them, because the resiliency that so many kids bring to school is why I continue to remain insanely optimistic, because our kids deserve that. So powerful. Anything else that stood out as in your role as a superintendent watching this unfold?
Sure, lots of things. An additional thing, and again, I want to highlight Chilhowee High School. The students led an initiative, and it's called Suds for Buds. And this is an opportunity, a laundry service within the school. They have a clothing donation of clothing. The leadership of the school, student leadership, works to collect clothing for kids who need it. And they launder the clothes during their free time for kids who need that. And, you know, that's something identified by students, and led by students, and will continue because of students. And what we have found, Matthew, is anything that is grassroots, developed by the staff, whoever the staff member is, or the students, has such a long-lasting impact. You know, I can say, hey, do this, or whatever the idea is. Man, that's not what it's about. It's about starting organically, letting it grow. And students can identify the needs. Staff members can identify the needs. And then how do you cope with it? How do you deal with it? How do you solve it? And some of the things are just remarkable. If you just throw out a problem, there's a solution. And it just we can't solve everything. I don't want to mislead there. But some just great initiatives have arisen because of this.
Well, and I keep hearing this mantra of relationships and empowerment, because I'm going to tell a very quick story. And I warned you, I do like to talk. So, but it's a very good example. I had 4 fourth grade boys walk into, they actually called me into my own office. I was actually in the hallway, and they're like, can we speak to you in your office? And I'm like, wait, did I just get called into my own office by fourth graders? So I went in, and they said, we don't have enough supplies in our room, and we want to host a fundraiser. Now, my brain went to, oh Lord, this could be a train wreck, to, all right, guys, how can I help, right? Like, what can I do? And of course, it went from like airplanes flying over with paratrooper people jumping out to a family dance, which, you know, I had to narrow the focus. But it was amazing giving the boys a platform. They called Pizza Hut themselves on their own parents' phone without telling me they were calling and asked for pizza donations, which they got. You know, they called local community and they wrote letters. Like, the amount of energy that these and synergy that these boys showed was awe-inspiring to me. And I knew at that point, like, this is about letting kids, right, solve some of these problems. Because at the end of the day, they know them better than we do, right? And they have solutions that you and I probably would never consider. And so that empowerment for everyone is so important. And you know, because you've actually said the words, you said earlier, bless their hearts, right? That's a good Southern term. But what we can't do is bless little kids' hearts, right? And bless kids' hearts. What we got to do is empower kids and build resilience. So what else do you have? Because you're getting me fired up.
Well, I've got a couple of things, and then just a couple more things. And anytime I can brag on the work of the schools and the kids and the teachers, I want to do that. We have, what we're finding, and I think you'll see this as a trend with any educator, is we're seeing more difficult behavioral problems coming in at the early ages. We're seeing kids with just some extreme behavioral concerns. What that ties back to, I think time will tell. I think some may be tied to ACEs, some may be tied to other things. We just don't know yet. But our schools, our elementary schools, have developed sensory rooms to where if we have a youngster just having just sensory overload, they can go to the room and decompress and calm down and then be able to transition back. We have sensory hallways in our elementary schools where they can be active while they're walking to cafeteria or whatever the case may be. We also have calming rooms, and calming rooms and sensory rooms are two different things, and they work really, really well. A couple of other things that we've implemented beginning this year are telemed services in all of our schools. So all of our schools now have the ability. We cover 452 square miles in Smith County. And as you can imagine, traveling, and our central location is Marion, and traveling from the extremes to the local hospital takes time and finances, and some of our families just can't make that happen. So we found a way to be able to incorporate telemed services in all of our schools. In fact, two of our schools have nurse practitioners through a local medical department, which is just amazing to us. Now, the cool component to this is we also have telemental health services, brand new this year. And what we were finding is that youngsters that may be experiencing a crisis situation, going to the ER and having to wait for hours and hours for any type of treatment, we can do it immediately on the spot with a trained telemed service provider. So just a couple of things that we've implemented, and we're very proud to be able to do that.
I mean, you know, I'm almost speechless, which doesn't happen very often. But to see the wraparound services for communities and kids. And, you know, I'm in a school that had a nurse practitioner at one point. We have the most beautiful nurses station and room. And I've just been inspired to try to get that back, because so many kids just don't have access to basic care that just needs to happen. And of course, here's, and you said it, we can't do it all, but here's the thing, if we can and we can be innovative around it, then why not just try it? And I think that our educators have capacity, right? And here's a statement that I've heard before: we're teachers, not therapists. And Dr. Bruce Perry was on this show and he said, we don't need therapists. We need loving and caring teachers in schools. And I think what you're describing is that's the environment that you're building, but you're bringing in these pieces that are also so imperative.
Matthew, we explain it as a bicycle wheel. If you can imagine ACEs or trauma being the center, there are a lot of spokes going to that trauma. And, you know, that's a school system, again, sheriff's department, community services, court services, all of those come in and impact and can impact and help alleviate that trauma on a child. I would like to say this, you know, we spoke about the LENS program. I called the sheriff and the captain with the sheriff's office, and it was absolutely, how can we help? With the telemental health services, Mount Rogers Youth Services, again, that's tied to our community service board. I called our liaison there, and her comment was, sure, how can we help? So I'm not sure that, again, I do feel like that in communities, there's tons of amazing work going on. I just don't know that there's the catalyst to bring all of that work together. And that's what I believe is the strength with the program through United West Southwest Virginia. I think that's going to be the piece that brings the right players to the table to expand good things throughout Southwest Virginia.
And I can tell you, I've seen that happen in our community, and it's called ACE Nashville. It's where they now have three divisions in ACE Nashville: policy, education. There's one other one I can't honestly remember, but it is a collective of multifaceted, multi-sectored community members that come together on quarterly meetings and think about what does this look like. You know, we have a judge, she's been on this show, Judge Sheila Calloway, who is trying to look at the juvenile judicial system differently, as opposed to locking kids up, providing support and rehabilitation around mentorships and things. So I think that is an amazing step, because once you get everybody at the same table, you've already said it, the inventiveness, the innovation, the support is going to roll like a steam train. I mean, and that I think is powerful. And I think another piece that listeners need to hear is there is no magic playbook to this work. Like there's no magic playbook that somebody says, okay, as a superintendent, you need to do, these are the 16 things you need to do, and it's all going to be good. It takes innovation.
We, can I share my hopes with you at this point? And my, you know, there's always that, that goal that you're trying to reach. And we know what the outcome, what our desire is, but we have identified an area and it's gaining tons of momentum for us. And again, COVID hit and sort of derailed our initiative. But one of the things that we're trying to accomplish is a collaborative with school systems, with pediatricians' offices. And the fact that when a pediatrician, the gatekeeper for youngsters to enter school in Virginia is a preschool physical. You have to have a preschool physical before you can attend school. So we know youngsters have to go to a physician. What we would like to do is to have an ACE screener at each physician's office when they do the school entrance exam. And again, voluntary, we know that there's the possibility of not being factual information. We know that there's refusal. We know there's all sorts of things. But for that screener to be conducted, and our goal is not to have the results of the screener, but to have a result of you need to give Dennis a little bit more love on the first day of school because he's had some issues in life. And what we found as educators is we have youngsters that come to school from day one that may exhibit behavioral challenges, may exhibit some concerns academically, just it can manifest in so many different ways. And we try to deal with it. We try to deal with it through pre-K, kindergarten, first, second, and maybe we end up at a special education referral in second or third grade. And then you do the social and you do background from birth history. And you're like, oh, my goodness, I see that why there may be some difficulties here. So if we can address that in a preschool physical prior to the youngster even stepping foot on school grounds and begin wraparound services prior to the beginning of school, what type of difference could we make for that kid from day one?
You know, and I think, too, that as I was a foster parent for almost 2 years to two of my previous students, and they had experience. I don't ever tell their trauma stories, but they had experienced things that are incomprehensible. And then I have my birth son who has probably never experienced an adversity in his life and doesn't even realize it. Right. But at the end of the day, I want them treated the same, right? With empathy, with grace, with pre-forgiveness, but also with love, with accountability, with support. I want the same thing for all three of our boys. And I think that there are lenses we have to be cognizant of, right? We can't just assume every kid is like our own children or like us or grew up like us. But I also know that kids may come into school with a lack of skills, whether it's they come into your school at kindergarten or third grade. Every kid possesses genius. Every kid possesses abilities. And I think what you said is we wait until it's an exceptional ed referral and we're sitting in an S team or even worse, a potential first IEP meeting. And these things come out and it's like, wait, what? Right? So powerful, such powerful, powerful work. So when you say my hopes, that's one of the hopes. But what do you, if you could envision as the superintendent of your school district, what would you hope to see in the next 5 years? What would you like to see happen for your teachers, students, staff, parents, and community?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, Matthew, I think that we will be dealing with the mental health aspect of COVID for years to come. I don't think this is something that any of us are prepared to deal with right now. I think that will shape a lot of the work that we do in the next 24, 36 months. But as a superintendent within our school division, the legacy that I want to leave, let me answer it that way. The legacy I would like to leave in Smith County is for there to be an awareness that kids can live in different circumstances, that we welcome that, that we don't judge, that we can identify that without having an evaluation, and we can take the child where they are and help them grow on an academic level, on an emotional level, and to make that happen. And then our testimonies, I believe, will be when our youngsters come back to see us, when we hear the impact from the mom and dad, when we hear the impact from the grandparents. And with all my being, I believe that our health outcomes will improve. I believe our incarceration rate will get better, but it's not going to happen overnight. But if we stay the course and we all work together, I do believe that it will make a generational change.
You know, wouldn't it be nice I don't know if you saw my shirt, but I am known as an unapologetic disruptor, which means I say things that I probably shouldn't, but maybe hopefully one day that maybe the bigger picture could be that we actually invest in the education of kids on the front end, as opposed to the incarceration of adults on the back end. And we have to look at this through an equity lens, because at the end of the day, it is, right? It is equity. It's about, because you've come from a circumstance and maybe you've had these challenges, you know, and I know well, there is a school to prison pipeline. Kids are prepared for prison from the moment they walk into our schools in pre-kindergarten. We've got to break that cycle of getting kids on that pathway for incarceration, as opposed to getting kids on the pathway for their own resilience and ability and their own fullest potential, because it's a system we know is there and it's going to take a lot of work, right? But I love to hear that you're like, we're doing it. This is what our goals are.
Right. And momentum, I would like to read a quote to you. And again, this is our Sheriff Chip Shuler. When I was speaking with him about the cost for the regional jail, this is his direct quote. It says, "It would be my hope to see less funds going toward incarceration and used for education instead. I believe that many of our inmates are the result of traumatic experiences in their lives that have gone undiagnosed and untreated." What foresight is that? I mean, that's amazing. And I believe that's a testament to the community work and the evolution of ACEs and the awareness of trauma and resilience in Smith County. When you have your sheriff that is making statements like that, that's pretty profound.
You gave me goosebumps, and I'm not joking you. I just got goosebumps, because when you've got a community that is building that synergy and that movement forward, where the sheriff has identified the reason we're locking people up isn't because of their lack of caring, it's because of the experiences that they've had. And I've seen studies that in prisons, it is as high as 98% of prisoners who have said they've experienced trauma as a child. And, you know, I think we have to have these open and honest conversations. And for you as a superintendent to become a conduit of many, I know there's many people doing this in your community, but for you to step in that space of vulnerability and honesty and putting yourself into this conversation is admirable. And I know you don't want to take any compliments, because I can already tell you're going to push that right off on the people that are working with you. But it's admirable, and it's more work that we need other superintendents and other school leaders and other community leaders to step into. So is there a time where you're like, you may have taken a risk, or you may have said something or tried something that was like, uh-oh, maybe not right now?
Maybe too forward of a step, I suppose. One of the additional pieces is, and again, you have to think about our geographic location and our medical supports and our mental health supports. One of the issues, and I heard this from I serve on a couple of different committees, but it is a practicing physician, but also an educator out of ETSU, East Tennessee State University. And she made the comment about the idea of a soft handoff between a medical provider and mental health support, and all within the same offices, which here, and Matthew, in your area, that's probably very common. Here, it's not at all. And what we are advocating, again, at Mount Rogers, our health director, Dr. Karen Shelton, is all on board with us. And again, it's Dr. Shelton, here's an idea. And she said, I like it. Let's try it. So, you know, I feel like that I may have pushed a little hard trying to persuade pediatricians to welcome someone in their office to do that. But if you think about this, and we have such a backlog of mental health support in Smith County because of lack of providers. So you can go to a medical, you can go to a physician for a checkup or concerns or whatever, and identify, you know, they really need to talk to somebody, but yet it's a 4 week out appointment, and that just doesn't work. You know, that just doesn't help our cause at all. So being able to provide that support within the same office, and it's called a soft handoff. I mean, I took that from Dr. Scetsina out of ETSU, and it's where you identify and the person walks down the hall and immediately receives services. So we're advocating, and we have, and again, pre-COVID, but we have with Dr. Shelton's help, the conversation has been had and most are receptive to let's try to make this work.
I wish I could say that could be normal here. It's not. I mean, I'm going to be honest, and having two sons that had a lot of mental health and medical needs, those two things never came together. And I think how powerful it would be. And let me give you an example of what was said to me when one of the boys was diagnosed with severe PTSD. The psychiatrist at Vanderbilt University, which is a very well-known, prestigious university, said, I also have to put ADHD down so that the medical doctor and the school can at least have some kind of understanding of what behaviors they'll see. And to me, that blew my mind of like, hold on a minute. You have to put this label on a child just so people in different sectors can have the same idea of what the child needs. It was amazing, or it was mind-boggling. I want to go to one of the comments that was posted, because I want to go back to it. And it was, the testimony is when our kids come back to see us. Such relevant, right? As educators, we want to see quick. We want to see response. We want to see things fixed quickly. And that may not happen. Talk a little bit more about what you meant by that, because I feel you.
Yeah, and I am fortunate enough to teach a class at Emory and Henry College, and it's a special education class. And really it's about all the different types of disabilities and qualifications and things like that for students to be identified for special ed. And as an educator, how to co-teach and make that work in a classroom to meet the child at their level. And one of the videos that I show in class is, and it's a YouTube video, it's called Chad. And it just Chad. And then what it is, it's a young man that had a difficult home life, and he's going through town and he's talking about, it's a real emotional video, and I may even get a little emotional talking about it, but he just had a tough life, and he's talking, sort of narrating the story, and he talks about his football coach. And then at the end of this, he sees his football coach standing there, and just the emotional, I'm getting just goosebumps thinking about it right now, the emotional connection with his coach, because he was the stable component. It wasn't Chad's dad. It wasn't anybody else in his family. It was the coach. And the coach was the stable component. And the coach spoke about it as Chad was a good kid. You know, he was one that he needed football more than football needed him, if that makes any sense to you. But the embrace that they had at the end of that and the true, and this was real. I think it was a real video. It was just emotional. And what I tried to share with our new teachers and any young person coming into education, you've got a 30-year career ahead of you. Imagine how many lives you can impact. You know, that's the goal. You academics, that's going to come. You do what you're supposed to, you're going to be just fine and your kids are going to do well. But what type of impact can you make on society? And it's that relationship piece. And just, it's a 5-minute video. You share it with them. It's an emotional time. But the light bulb goes off that education is more than just reading, writing, math and social studies. It's tied to a bigger piece. And it's making our communities better, our states better, the world a better place.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I have no intentions on leaving my school district, but if I do, and Virginia is a place, I'm on my way, because to hear you say that is so inspiring to me, that I just say you get it, right? There's people who get it and there's people who don't get it, right? And I think at the end of the day, in Edutopia, there's a whole video called Learning is Social and Emotional. They're not two separate things. We can't take relationships and social, emotional health and learning out of the equation because it's always there. And I think another quote that resonates with me as I was listening to you is Jim Sporletter, who was on this. Matter of fact, he was the very first guest on this podcast for Paper Tigers. He said a quote to me that I was on my computer for years. He said, Portell, you may not be able to reach 100% of your kids, but you can love 100% of your kids. And he wasn't talking about my personal kids, as you already know. And I think that's it. Sometimes we're planting seeds with kids, and we don't know the fruits of those seeds until years later, until that large adult walks in and says, can I talk to Mr. Portell? And you're like, sure, I don't. And then it clicks. In that moment of looking at my fourth graders in fourth grade, now I'm looking at an adult, and that conversation, it's priceless to an educator. It's priceless to a previous student. So I love that you said that, because at the end of the day, it may not happen right now. It just may not. So the last, I told you this was going to go fast. We're right at our 45 minutes. It's unbelievable. And I ask one question to every guest. What do you want educators who are listening or will listen to this podcast to know right now?
When you're dealing with a youngster that's having a difficult situation, look beyond the behavior. There's a backstory. And don't stop at the behavior. You've got to deal with the behavior. I'm not saying behaviors are not to be dealt with, but understand that there could very easily be a reason for the behavior. So take the time to get to know your kids. Take the time to get to know their backstories. I talk about backstories all the time. There's a backstory to all of us. And just don't let the behaviors get in the way of understanding where the child comes from, because that's likely a telling point to why you're dealing with the behaviors you're dealing with.
You know, and I think that's a great book title. So the last guest that we had on here was Mona Delahook. And we actually talked about this last week about her book, Beyond Behaviors. You're 100% right. We have to look beyond the surface, right? And if you want to see another great video on YouTube, it's called Beyond the Surface. It's if we only knew what people's experiences brought with them, we would be a different community. We'd be a different school. We'd be a different society if we could only see. So, Dr. Carter, if people want to follow your work, they want to follow you on social media, where can they find you? Where can they find you?
Yeah, Twitter at DennisCarter73. Smith County Schools, just Google Smith County Schools, and our county website will pop up. Not real active on social media, Matthew, just to be honest with you, for lots of different reasons. There's a lot of opinions about a lot of decisions being made with schools right now. So I just don't have social media per se. But at DennisCarter73. And my email address is DennisCarter@scsb.org. And that stands for SmithCountySchoolBoard.org. And I'll be glad to answer any question or address any concerns or anything anyone has.
Well, I appreciate it. And I get the social media thing. I don't know how every superintendent is doing it right now. I know I have the highest of respect and regard for my school district superintendent. But I definitely appreciate and have the highest respect for you and the work you are pulling off, because it certainly isn't easy. So all of the listeners, if you want to listen to me, you can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at Principal List. I'm Matthew Portell on Facebook, or you can follow the network, which is Trauma Informed Educators Network, Trauma Informed Educators Network podcast, and then the Trauma Informed Educators Network group, which has now hit 26,000 people, which is awesome. We just passed over that. And then lastly, Do not forget to put it on your calendar, March 1st, the Trauma Informed Educators Network Conference. The registration will go on sale. It is a very small conference by design, even virtually. We are not trying to sell out thousands of tickets. We are trying to keep it a small group of motivated, synergistic thinkers that want to come together and disrupt. So if you put that on your calendar, it's on Eventbrite. You can search that. And tickets are only, registration is only $125. It's 3 days. We have 40 sessions, 2 keynote speakers, and 1 rock star panel. So thank you all. And as always, please, please, please wash your hands and wear a mask.